opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good evening, good evening.
You hear California? You feel that bass right in the back there? Bow.
Yeah, was that you? Was that you playing that?
Oh, I wish. I just like that. Bow.
Good evening, this is Nigel and James.
Hey!
It's February 8th.
Can you imagine? We're already in February.
February 8th. Mm-hmm. It's kind of crazy.
Good song choice.
Yeah? That was...
Thank you.
Our wonderful producer.
I rely heavily on my emotional state during the entire show based upon...
The music choice?
The music choice, yes. Mm-hmm. So he does really good. He keeps me floating.
Yep. So a note to self, no Slayer for James.
What's going on?
Well, there's a lot.
There is.
That was like, you know, the end of the world show, part 9. I don't know how many people, I'm sure we have a number, but I don't know how many people we have in our community that are from Turkey or from Syria, but I don't know if you've been paying attention to that earthquake, which was brutal.
It was awful. It is awful.
Ongoing right now?
I keep seeing, you know, they just keep pulling people out, which is such a blessing in that regard, just little kids, and it's just, it makes you sick. It's,
yeah.
I mean, this was a
big one.
Big one.
Yeah, yeah, huge.
And so, you know, our thoughts and prayers go out to those members in our community who may have people over there.
Yeah.
But that was a big one.
It was.
And there's a bunch of other stuff going on. So one of the topics that's ongoing,
mm-hmm.
Even in our community, I think many communities.
Nationally.
Nationally. But here is the topic of cannabis.
Mm-hmm. Right?
It has other names. Marijuana.
Sounds better in European, didn't
right?
it?
Right. Yeah. Marijuana.
Mary
whatever.
Jane.
And names. You know, I got to admit for myself that I'm in that period of time in my life where sometimes I have to admit that I was wrong about certain things or preconceived notions, right, about many things, I think,
mm-hmm.
Over the last couple of years. I think a lot of people are going through that right now, right, the last 3-4 years, like a little wake-up call. And so for me, I was always in that camp that just believed everything I was told on the TV, right? So even as pertaining to cannabis, that it was bad and that, mm-hmm. You know, gateway drug and whatever else. And then I remember when the medical marijuana initiative happened, yeah. And I was in L.A., and all of a sudden everybody was like, you know, a doctor, and they were, you know, prescribing medical marijuana, and I didn't buy it, right? I was like, and I think I'm one of those rare breeds that even though I was in the rock and roll industry, I never partook of any of that. But then over the last...
You were more of an LSD user.
Yes. no, I didn't partake of anything.
Yeah, I know. You're squeaky.
But then, you know, over the last, I would say 10 years, whenever something was deemed illegal,
mm-hmm.
I would, like, try to pursue why something was illegal.
Yeah.
And cannabis is one of those subjects that I never understood why it was illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like,
especially if you even remotely know a little bit about history and its use throughout the Americas from... And agricultural and manufacturing, right? I mean, hemp and right. all that stuff was a very large portion of our history as far as when it was being developed.
Yep.
And use, you know, its use wasn't necessarily what we think of it for today. It was very industrial.
But there was a period of time, even here, that it was legal. And it was actually legit medicine and legit, you know, prescribed.
Mm.
And
before now,
back in the late 1800s and early 1900s.
I didn't even know
you can
that.
You can still find the original little cannabis bottles, right? The
mm-hmm.
antique ones.
Mm-hmm.
and then all of a sudden it wasn't
mm-hmm.
legal. And to cut the chase now, I mean, now I understand that the biggest fighter against cannabis is the pharmaceutical industry.
Well, imagine they didn't capture it and put a dollar amount on it.
Well, certain things you can't patent, right? So, but I still find myself, personally, I don't want to say uneducated, but I'm trying to educate myself more and more and more. And now that I'm going over to Humboldt Seminar regularly, I've actually met some people who are a lot smarter than I am about it. And I believe it.
Yeah.
As soon as the pharmaceutical industry says you cannot take this over here, I think now many of us go, well, let's go look over there.
right? They not learned that is part of human nature? Not everybody, right. But definitely there are a lot of us that are like that. When you say no, I immediately go, what? Why?
I mean, yes, that's exactly what he does.
Same here. But certain things I'll buy, right? So obviously, fentanyl is just, it will kill you.
Bam.
So we're lucky enough to have an expert with us. I'm going to call him Patient Zero, but we have with us John Prinz. Hello, John.
So here from an out, Patient Zero is you.
He's officially...
I've been Patient Zero since I taught my doctor, Michael H. Moskowitz. He wrote a book about medical cannabis. Everyone can go and look on Amazon. And he gave me the name Patient Zero. It took me 6 months before I actually... I was a little mad because I played sports. I was number one.
And now you're a zero.
And he explained to me what Patient Zero is. I'm the first patient that replaced OxyContin with medical cannabis over 18 years ago. So, and that's why I'm called Patient Zero.
So, John, why don't you give us a little introduction into who you are and what happened to you to get you to this point.
My story started off at – I used to work at a paper mill in Anderson, California, in 1996, all the way up until 1992, I got injured there when I was 31 years old, and I had to have one back surgery. I had one back surgery here in Redding. It failed. And so a gentleman in Red Bluff sent me down to a Joe Montana surgeon, Arthur White, in Daly City. He did four surgeries on me to fix what the gentleman up here did to me in Redding, California, and I've been going to the Bay Area ever since. In 1996, when the Compassion Use Act passed, my doctor, Michael Moskowitz, he gave me a recommendation to the first cannabis buyers club in San Francisco, owned by Dennis Perrone, basically the godfather of medical marijuana.
So is that his book that you're holding?
Yeah, this is his book.
It's a cool cover.
You have a traveling library with you.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and so, well, it's because I knew these guys. I got to be friends with Dennis, just like Jack Hare and the LV Musica, one of the federal patients. But as far as my story goes, I have what they call intractable pain. I've had five back surgeries, three discs taken out, and I got five more that need to come out sometime in my life. And so I read a lot of history books. And I read a history book one day going to Haight-Ashbury getting a pipe. It's from a Harvard professor. It's called Marijuana, the Forbidden Medicine. And the doctor's name is Dr. Lester Grinspoon. And I learned in that book in 1914 that heroin was replaced by cannabis. So I had to look at myself. I was using cannabis for depression. And I was on 14 prescription drugs, including OxyContin. High levels, 1,125 milligrams a day. I lost 20 teeth, and my doctor said I could live forever on it. And basically, I took upon myself, because I live in Tehama County, and I started using this medicine to get off of all my medicine. And so I got off of all prescription drugs, including OxyContin, told my doctor about it, and he then started writing a book. I have over 165 medical reports talking about how I use medical marijuana instead of OxyContin. And so I took it even a step further. After I got hurt at the mill, I was in a union. I've been in three unions, Boilermakers, Machinists, and Paper Mill Union. And so we're real strong people as mill workers. And so I took this to United States Senator Dianne Feinstein in 2009. Because I learned that we have a federal medical marijuana program out there. It started in 1978. The first federal patient, his name was Robert Randall, And he used to get 300 marijuana cigarettes grown for him every month in the state of Mississippi. So every university has a botanist and every university has gardens. And so that's where they grew this federal medical marijuana. And if you Google it, they still have one gentleman. His name is Irvin Rosenfeld. He's in Florida. But my friend Elvi Musica, she lives in Oregon, and she used to get 300 marijuana cigarettes every month since 1988. And so that's what I took it to United States Senator Feinstein, because if Elvi could get free medicine, I wanted my free medicine. So I started writing Feinstein and getting letters back from her. I'm on Social Security. I have medical documents from Social Security, from Medicare, saying I use medical marijuana in lieu of opiates. And it's very, very rare, because the federal government doesn't recognize, under the Controlled Substance Act of 1970, it's Richard Nixon's law. It says marijuana, LSD, and heroin are all a Schedule One. Schedule Two is the prescription opiates like OxyContin, Norco, Vicodin, I think, is Schedule Three. So you were talking about the pharmacy. The pharmacy doesn't control America. Congress does. We watched it last night, and Congress, like Vice President Harris, I have letters from her when she's a senator. She's trying to pass a banking law to open this up for all the industry to, put their money in the bank. And if that happens, then my Dr. Moskowitz says this thing. And you guys, we used to hear this when we were watching a show when we were kids, the genie's out of the bottle. And so the genie's out of the bottle, and is the industry going to win? And so that's what's going on right now. We need legislation to change, and California is trying to change the legislation. The Department of Cannabis Control is asking the DOG in California, if it's okay, they pass a bill so they can supply all the legal stores and illegal industry in California, supply the other legal states.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, so you just jumped straight into the deep end. So we're going to take our first 2-minute break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to deconstruct what you just said, because there's a whole bunch there.
Okay.
We'll be right back with Patient Zero.
Roll me up and smoke me when I die. And if anyone don't like it, just look them in the eye. I didn't come here and I ain't leaving.
And now, the Real Estate Minute, brought to you by Vista Real Estate.
When it comes to buying and selling real estate, one size does not fit all. Higher-priced homes sell differently than medium-priced homes. Make sure your realtor knows the difference and has the right tools to get your home sold for the highest price. Hi, I'm Chad Phillips with Vista Real Estate. When you're ready to sell, make sure you ask your realtor how they plan to sell your home and what they'll do differently to make your listing stand out. Ask your realtor what kind of experience they have in marketing and sales outside the real estate industry. Be sure to choose a realtor with solid marketing and sales training who also understands tech and internet advertising. Interview at least 3 realtors and make sure to call the number one high-end home selling agent for the past 13 years, me.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today. And now, the Real Estate Minute, brought to you by Vista Real Estate.
When selling your home, you're probably already aware of the marketing tools realtors use to get the job done. But do you know how those tools are being leveraged? Are you getting the best possible exposure? Or is your realtor just doing the bare minimum? Hi, I'm Chad Phillips with Vista Real Estate. When you're ready to sell, make sure you ask your realtor what their vision is for marketing your home. Every home tells a story, and your realtor should showcase that story, utilizing creative photography, aggressive internet advertising, print media, and more. In addition, make sure your property is being marketed to other areas. Before you choose a realtor to represent you, ask if they plan to target more than just local buyers. Interview at least 3 realtors and make sure Vista Real Estate is on your list.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today.
And we're back.
We are.
Nigel and James, February 8th.
Can you not bother me right now? I'm texting.
Are you texting? Are we interrupting you? So sorry. You can continue.
Please hold.
So we're here with John Prince. We semi-jokingly call him Patient Zero because that's what you refer to in your book. Or that title was given to you. So we're talking about cannabis, and cannabis seems to be this ongoing conversation. Me personally, I was always confused by why is it illegal. One of the things that was told me is that very rarely or almost never has anybody actually overdosed to the point of death on pure cannabis. Is that true or is that not true?
That you can't overdose when you're smoking it, but I developed a medicine, obviously.
So you have one that you could
drink olive oil that's one tablespoon is 300 milligrams of THCA and THC. So one time, you know,
you used it on your pasta?
No, I had an implant put in, and I used 7 tablespoons. That's 2,100 milligrams. Oh. And so I had to kind of like look at my wife and say, hey, can you help me remember to breathe? And so it does some short circuit deal, and I don't know. Although there is also...
That happens to me with NyQuil.
Nigel, there are patients, or there's people that will use this, because it is a drug. And if they use it, they have done stupid stuff, and that can harm them. So, yeah.
Well, but it's just like anything, right? Same with
this is non-addictive.
Same thing with alcohol or anything. I mean, as soon as somebody becomes addicted, I mean, alcoholics. You know, I mean, it's a crazy thing, right? And my whole thing is just the difference between something that's quote unquote natural versus the prescription. Painkiller industry, which I think is a multi-billion-dollar industry, if I'm not correct.
Yeah, so is the cancer one.
So that leads me to when I started paying attention, I saw a 9-part series, which I'll tell James when he's done texting. It was called The Truth About Cancer, right? And it was done by this couple who had a family member develop cancer, and they went through this whole treatment, the chemo thing, and it just wrecked them, and then they died anyway, and turned out they didn't necessarily have to die. And so they did a deep dive into the medical industry. And even in that series, there was a whole segment on cannabis and how many people who were diagnosed with cancer, went the cannabis route correctly, and it cured them.
So you've heard of Rick Simpson oil?
I have now, yes.
So you can Google this guy in Canada. His name is Rick Simpson. And this Jack Hare is the one that told me about it. He has a book called Emperor Wears No Clothes. And so Rick Simpson came up with this Rick Simpson oil, and a lot of people have used it. I know a little kid. His name is Landon Riddle from Utah, and he came to Northern California because Utah didn't have medical marijuana, and he cured his cancer. He was eating Oxycontin when he was 2 years old. Jeez. So there's a lot of cancer survivors that have used cannabis. I use it for pain, hoping that it prevents, because I do drink it, it prevents any cancer that I might have coming in my body because I have a lot of cancer in the family, you know.
So that's the thing, right? So I was always under the impression that, you know, that whole Cheech and Chong thing, everybody's smoking it, whatever. And I was confused. I readily admit that I was confused. I didn't understand the whole thing about edibles or brown. And I grew up in Amsterdam, for crying out loud.
Oh.
Right? Well, Dennis Prohn in itself is just that's bizarre.
I know. I grew up in Amsterdam. And
Dennis Prohn used to say, Nigel, have you ever been low, feeling low?
Of course.
Well, he said, if you feel low, there's got to be something to get you high. So he's the godfather of medical marijuana because of the AIDS patients.
So for me, to be honest with you, it was always music. It was always rock and roll that got me high, right?
Yeah.
State, right? some good old-fashioned rock and roll. So I grew up in Amsterdam, and I never partook of any of it. None of the cannabis, none of the weed, nothing, right? Mm-hmm. Never even drank. I was is not my deal.
Boring.
Who you are.
So what rock Nigel and roll no were fun. You influenced by?
All of it.
Oh, well.
Eric Clapton?
No, I just remember, you know, walking down the street and walking past in Amsterdam and walking past a record store, and all of a sudden I saw the back cover of Kiss Alive 2. I don't know if you remember that, but it was an instant, like, what is that? And that changed my whole trajectory, and then AC/DC, and I remember getting the Metallica demo tapes and all that. And so that that
I saw AC/DC in 1970-something. It was at Bill Graham's Oakland Coliseum. It's called Day in the Green.
Yeah, you can still see that on YouTube.
90,000 people.
A lot of people. So I've been around it my whole life, obviously. But I didn't realize until recently that there were, you know, in the last couple of years, you know, there's things like edibles and in the little droppers and
yes.
tinctures that you go. And so, you know.
There's a great movie out there, Nigel. Dr. Moskowitz is in it. It's called CBD Nation.
CBD Nation.
It's on everywhere, Netflix, Roku, CBD Nation. You'll see a doctor named Dr. Uma Delabala. She has a group called Doctors and Jocks. They want to get this medicine in the NFL. People like Jim McMahon from Chicago Bears. Mm-hmm. I met him. I would go to this place called Cannabis Science Conference. It's in Portland, Oregon. So if you really want to get educated by the science of it, there's a lot of events out there that are changing everything.
Well, I will tell you, you know, personally, like I hate taking Advil or ibuprofen or any of that because it just messes with your stomach and it just doesn't.
But you don't like to be high on marijuana either.
I don't like to be high on marijuana. So actually, last time I was over in Humboldt, somebody gave me some.
You're a perfect candidate for CBD then.
No, you're a perfect candidate for THCA. Do you know what THCA is?
No, but I will tell you that somebody gave me some.
Gummies.
A cincture. What do you call it?
Tincture.
That thing. And dropper. So I took some to help me sleep in pain. And I got to tell you, it was a night and day difference compared to taking Tylenol or Advil or anything like that.
I called him 52 times the next day and he could not get up. No, I'm just joking.
No, but like I need to be able to put my money where my mouth is, right?
So can I teach you what THCA is and all the listeners out there? If you take, I learned this at Cannabis Science Conference, and I got invited up there, and LV told me it's all about the milligrams now, and so things have changed. And so I go up there, and I learned what THCA is. You take the raw bud that everybody has that they're going to put a flame to and burn, roll it up in a joint, whatever, and burn it. The burning carbon off of the A acid, it will make it THC, you'll get high. If you take the bud and grind it up in a coffee grinder, put it in some capsules like at the health food store, I feed my 82-year-old mother-in-law. She eats 5 of these THCA capsules every day. She doesn't want to be high, but she has different issues, and she's been off of Norco for 6 years. And I talk about her at my board of supervisor meetings all the time in Red Bluff. So THCA, if you just take the raw bud and grind it up and put it in a smoothie or anything, it's anti-inflammatory.
Yes.
Well, I'll have them come and see you because I wouldn't know where to start.
It's in Dr. Moskowitz's book as far as what THCA is.
So because I am one of those, like I don't want to get high or, you know.
No, it's perfect
for
you. Flying
off my rocker, I don't want to do any of that.
Do I look high?
No. So what I'm trying to say is, so for me personally, I'm just trying to educate myself on all of this because I no longer want to be in that category where I just randomly kill something off because I don't understand it.
Can I ask you how old you are?
You can ask me.
I'm 61, and everyone's going to get pain someday.
Yeah.
The question is, what you're going to use for that pain?
Yeah. Well, I know for a fact that I hate the pharmaceuticals. Like I can't
so
do the prescription meds. I had surgery, I don't know how many years ago, and they gave me, you got to be on this for 21 days, and I lasted like, you know, 6, and I'm like, I can't do it. So when we come back, let's take our next 2-minute break, because I want us to talk about overcoming the fear that the general public has of cannabis, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's obviously fear, right? And
yes.
So I think we need to address that. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
And now, the Real Estate Minute, brought to you by Vista Real Estate.
When it comes to buying and selling real estate, one size does not fit all. Higher-priced homes sell differently than medium-priced homes. Make sure your realtor knows the difference and has the right tools to get your home sold for the highest price. Hi, I'm Chad Phillips with Vista Real Estate. When you're ready to sell, make sure you ask your realtor how they plan to sell your home and what they'll do differently to make your listing stand out. Ask your realtor what kind of experience they have in marketing and sales outside the real estate industry. Be sure to choose a realtor with solid marketing and sales training who also understands tech and internet advertising. Interview at least 3 realtors and make sure to call the number one high-end home selling agent for the past 13 years, me.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today. And now, the Real Estate Minute, brought to you by Vista Real Estate.
When selling your home, you're probably already aware of the marketing tools realtors use to get the job done. But do you know how those tools are being leveraged? Are you getting the best possible exposure? Or is your realtor just doing the bare minimum? Hi, I'm Chad Phillips with Vista Real Estate. When you're ready to sell, make sure you ask your realtor what their vision is for marketing your home. Every home tells a story, and your realtor should showcase that story, utilizing creative photography, aggressive internet advertising, print media, and more. In addition, make sure your property is being marketed to other areas. Before you choose a realtor to represent you, ask if they plan to target more than just local buyers. Interview at least 3 realtors and make sure Vista Real Estate is on your list.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today.
Yay!
This is my jam. This is my period of time. Music.
This is?
Yeah.
1930s? Oh. Good evening. We're back. Nigel and James.
I like it.
February 8th, 2023. We're talking cannabis here with John Prinz, Patient Zero. I think it's an important topic just because it's, like, all around us, yeah. Right?
And do you do presentations? Like, do you?
Yeah, I have a presentation. I went to Utah and spoke back there. I spoke in Boston at New England Can, and it's just more or less you have to fund, you have to get yourself back there, you have to do everything just mm-hmm. to get the message out. But I have PowerPoint presentation. I can do anything, anywhere. It teaches mm-hmm. people what I've been through.
So that's good.
Let's see if we can take this apart. Because the fear, let's say, right, the fear mm-hmm. that I would say the general public has.
I think there's fear, there's concern, there's shame, there are a lot of layers to this over the years. It's just been such a controversial thing ever since I can remember being alive at so many different right. levels, right? I mean, people that smoked marijuana were criminals and people, you know, and you buy into all those things, right? And there's a stigma and all that kind of stuff. And then it's kind of changed. And like you, Nigel, there was probably a time too where I looked at it as, it was a really bad thing, right? Like, and then, yeah, the big thing was is that you started and then you go to the next drug, a gateway, and there's all these things. And I'm sure there's truth in every layer that there has been at some point in time. But it is highly manipulated. It is highly, charged. They keep it that way because it makes it somewhat demonized. But I, too, have come around. I mean, I have a son that has autism, right? And he had a very difficult time in school. And one of the things that we researched and did, we absolutely did not want to give him pharmaceuticals of any kind, especially until he was of the age to make decisions for himself to some extent. And while he was in development, right? Like, well, he was a developing brain, a person still going through puberty and growing and all that. We wanted to get him out of that phase before we took a look at true any type of pharmaceuticals, because we were always being encouraged to the medical and, you know, the medical, what's the word I'm looking for?
Industry?
Yeah, that, you know, oh, he should be put on medication. He should be. And we're like, no.
There's something in your gut that says, no, that's not right.
No. So, but there was a lot of things that we watched and saw where, you know, with the the CBD oils and stuff. So we ventured in and did that with him. And the big thing is he didn't want to feel anything, didn't want to feel high, well, that kind of stuff. But we just needed something that was going to give him a little bit of peace and stuff. And so when we started that, right, that was his senior year in high school, it really made a big difference on his day-to-day productivity in regards to being able to be a lot more in the moment. He was much more stable emotionally. He could sit for longer periods of time. He didn't need to move as much. So we saw a definite benefit in that regard for him. And he was the first to be in the morning, get up and say, here, you know, put it on my tongue, let's go. Because he knew that if he didn't, he was going to have a day that was a little bit more edgy and cutting, and he emotionally wasn't as stable. And so we saw a good success in that regard for him.
And this is a boy that combs the internet for everything.
And how long has he been on it for?
Well, he is not taking it anymore because he's graduated, and it probably is something that he should have and do, you know. But we did it through, you know, the majority of his senior year in high school.
Please watch that CBD Nation.
Okay.
It's really about the science, and it's a great film. Mm-hmm. There's a little girl in there named Riley. She got, in Delaware, she got it passed to where she can use her medicine in the schools.
Yeah.
And so the children are really going to change it. I asked Riley one time, I said, at Cannabis Science Conference, I said, Riley, I have a conservative supervisor, you know, what would you tell my supervisor? She said, just tell them to look at me.
I know, right?
So watch that show, CBD Nation. Mm-hmm. Everyone out there, it's a great movie, and it was real put together well. So mm-hmm. it's about the endocannabinoid system.
Yep.
So I mean, that's so I've made it a point to not be one of those anymore, like I was 10, 15 years ago, to just disregard it as BS. Mm-hmm. You know, people just want to get high and all that kind of stuff. So,
you didn't like Keith Richards, Bob Marley.
You know, yeah, well, Keith Richards. He's on a whole bunch of other stuff, right?
He's alive because he sang with Peter Tosh and stuff like that. Yeah. You know, think about it.
Well, there's, you know, the ongoing debate about Keith Richards that the whole world will die except for him. He'll be his own one man band because he'll still be here.
Willie Nelson.
Yeah, totally. But I started to research the legitimate medical use, right? So, you know, people legitimately, and there's a dirty word, right? There's a difference between curing somebody and treating somebody, right? And curing in the pharmaceuticals, on the medical industry.
That's a no-no.
That's a no-no. Because
do you know why I use the word cure? And because to push it into FDA's face, because I actually have the cure for OxyContin abuse. I call my medicine Fuchsia-Tema. I had it tested, and it's stronger. My medicine, Fuchsia-Tema, if I take 4 tablespoons, 1,200 milligrams of THCA and THC, you know how long it lasts? 8 hours. It's long active. If you smoke a joint, it's short active. Mm. And so I developed a medicine just like OxyContin is long active and Norco short active. And so
I just want to remind people, if you're listening, John, that you had, and I don't envy you for this, but you had 5 spinal surgeries, discs removed, and hardware inserted. You've gone through multiple epidurals. You were prescribed. You were on opioids for 12 years, right? And then you became addicted.
How could you not, Lord?
Right? And what was it?
Your teeth are beautiful, by the way.
770 milligrams of OxyContin a day. That doesn't seem like I'll tell you right now, I couldn't do that.
I'd lose my mind.
If you had some spinal pain and you ever been electrocuted?
No, I would just jump off the bridge.
Right? Well, you know, that's another subject we can't talk about on here.
So
that's my HIPAA law.
Yeah, okay. So let's say somebody's listening, because I do want to get back to this whole fear thing that people have, you know. So I would say if you're in that period, in this season where you start to question everything, this is something that's worth questioning and researching and actually getting down to some of the details. So what would you say to somebody, and obviously I'm not a medical doctor, James is on a daily basis.
I play one on TV.
I say this all the time. There's patients out there that might have lost their opiates and their doctors won't prescribe pain medicine no more. You don't seem to understand why. You think the doctor's being mean. So what you got to do is educate your doctor on a better way. And medical cannabis is it. So go out and buy Dr. H. Michael H. Moskowitz, MD. It's called Medical Marijuana. Buy his book and take that to your doctor and say, I want what this doctor is talking about. It's a guide for patients, practitioners, and caregivers. And so, and then go out and buy a Harvard professor's book called Marijuana, the Forbidden Medicine. And marijuana is spelled with an H. Lester Grinspoon, Dr. Lester Grinspoon, and show your doctor what replaced pharmaceutical heroin in 1914. There's no difference between 2023. And so any patient out there that's having a hard time with any pain, understand this. If you take opiates, you cannot smoke a joint and get out of pain. You're going to have to eat it or drink it and get it into a more of the milligrams. And so I'm a pain patient. And I talk about it like patients helping patients. And so this is what I used to be on, 1,125 milligrams of opiates a day, plus 13 other pharmaceutical drugs that everyone has to take. I take 2,400 milligrams of THCA and THC a day to replace that. So if you're on opiates, let's say 80 milligrams a day, you'll need 160 milligrams of THCA or THC or CBD and THC, because a lot of people don't know what THCA is, so I'm not going to confuse you. Go, you can get CBD and THC in milligrams, and it's all about that. But the problem, Nigel, is patients don't have no money, and I'm trying to get Normal and ACE in California to change the law so our insurance, our state insurance, would fund our cannabis. It's Health and Safety Code 11362.785D as in dog. And if I got that, I would have my state insurance company, Liberty Mutual, buying me 2 pounds a month at a store wherever I want to go. It's a win-win for the store. It's a win-win for patients. And so that has to be done. So just going to the doctor and saying, I need cannabis, and then going to a store, they won't be able to afford it. Mm-hmm. And so
it sounds like it could potentially even be a win-win for the pharmacy.
It would
the
be
insurance.
If you could. Well, no, insurance. Big insurance loves big pharma.
Yeah.
Straight up.
So you'd think that they would be able to handle that on a more reason, on a
change,
scale.
Change.
On a
it's scale. Not about curing. It's about treating.
No, not about that. I'm thinking of they save money. They might be able to save money and actually make better profits for themselves, since that's really what it's about. It's money.
It's about money. Look at what I just gave you.
I have a question.
Just one?
Just one. How do they know how to dose it? Like, how do they know how much?
See, the doctors don't know that. It's an individual thing. And so what I developed.
Start off small, build up.
Right. And so he didn't know when he, you didn't know when you, and so it's, you've got to just try it. But there's advocates out there for like CBD and you're talking about autism. There's a gentleman I know in Santa Barbara. His name is, Mike Richardson, and he has autism kids, and he is a big advocate. So there's a lot of out there on Facebook and different, you know, some of us older advocates are just on Facebook and not on other things.
You're not on MySpace?
No, that was a long time ago. But I have an email out there for anybody that wants to get a hold of me. It's John Prince, JohnPrinz at Hughes.net, and anyone can get a hold of me, ask questions.
He gets his messages from outer space.
I'm also on Facebook. You know?
Well, AOL, you got mail?
I actually have AOL a long time ago. I'm Dr. Green 420 on AOL.
So ooh, Dr. Green.
Those were all my letters from Feinstein and stuff in 2009. You know, it's a long time ago.
So. Yeah. So when did you transition from being just a patient? Let's take our last break. But then I want to get into how you transitioned from being a patient to an advocate, because it seems to be like a natural progression for many.
It works.
Because all of a sudden you start.
He felt better.
No,
it felt better.
There's a story behind it.
Okay, well, we'll save that until.
Okay.
And now, the Real Estate Minute, brought to you by Vista Real Estate.
When it comes to buying and selling real estate, one size does not fit all. Higher-priced homes sell differently than medium-priced homes. Make sure your realtor knows the difference and has the right tools to get your home sold for the highest price. Hi, I'm Chad Phillips with Vista Real Estate. When you're ready to sell, make sure you ask your realtor how they plan to sell your home and what they'll do differently to make your listing stand out. Ask your realtor what kind of experience they have in marketing and sales outside the real estate industry. Be sure to choose a realtor with solid marketing and sales training who also understands tech and internet advertising. Interview at least 3 realtors and make sure to call the number one high-end home selling agent for the past 13 years, me.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today. And now, the Real Estate Minute, brought to you by Vista Real Estate.
When selling your home, you're probably already aware of the marketing tools realtors use to get the job done. But do you know how those tools are being leveraged? Are you getting the best possible exposure? Or is your realtor just doing the bare minimum? Hi, I'm Chad Phillips with Vista Real Estate. When you're ready to sell, make sure you ask your realtor what their vision is for marketing your home. Every home tells a story, and your realtor should showcase that story, utilizing creative photography, aggressive internet advertising, print media, and more. In addition, make sure your property is being marketed to other areas. Before you choose a realtor to represent you, ask if they plan to target more than just local buyers. Interview at least 3 realtors and make sure Vista Real Estate is on your list.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today.
These are, you know who this is?
Fears.
Yeah.
Who? Yeah. That one.
Tears for Fears.
Speaking of fears. So we're talking about cannabis. We have John Prinz with us.
Yeah.
John. Thank you for edumacating us.
Yeah. Real quick question. What do you have knowledge of the historical marijuana use or the plant in general back? I mean, how far back? Because I know that it's been used by people all over the world.
Yeah, the oldest book I have was written by a guy named Leonard Fuchs in 1542, a German professor and botanist, and he drew the first cannabis plant. And I had a Boston, because it's in Latin, I had a Boston professor decipher that page. And way back when I think they had doctors like Pliny and Galen, the Greeks, before Jesus walked, they used this plant, cannabis. And so in the Middle East, they have opium or they have cannabis. There's no other plant. So that's where the word comes from. Marijuana came from Hearst discriminating against the Mexican people in America. So it's really cannabis worldwide. The Germans call it hemp and other people different things. And so the plant is really cannabis. And if you really want to learn the history of it, just Jack Hare's book. I don't know if you've ever heard of Jack Hare, Emperor Wears No Clothes. He did 5 years in prison. No, he did 3 years in federal prison when Ronald Reagan was president for trying to get people signed up to do all this in 1980s. And he did for $5 fine. He would not pay it. And then he was in prison 3 years and he wrote this book. So he's very famous in the cannabis world. They even named a strain after him, Jack Hare, you know. But he was a friend of mine and I met him in 2006.
So this plant grows all over the world.
Or
has it been transplanted?
No, it really came out of like Nepal and area, and people in Europe started doing more of it because it's industrial hemp. And so it didn't. Who knows when it came to America? But as far as the reason why medical marijuana came to California was because of the AIDS patients. Dennis Perone in San Francisco is the birthplace for Medical Marijuana Compassion Use Act, and he had. Every Friday, this is what Dennis used to do. He had 8,800 members, and I was a member from up here. And I'd made my doctor's appointments on Friday because he gave away a free eighth every Friday. 8,800 the patients. And so it was really compassion given away. And so that's what patients need to learn. There's another lady in this book. It's called Brownie Mary. She used to make brownies for all the AIDS victims in the hospitals. And so there's always a reason why these advocates. Dennis has been arrested. Brownie Mary's been arrested. LV Music in Florida's been arrested. I was even arrested in Oregon for medical marijuana and got out of that trouble. And after getting out of that trouble, I called LV up and said, LV, should I go and ask for my medicine back? And she said, John, no, because the feds will be there. That was in 2005. And so after that, I started becoming a big advocate with a group called NORMAL, a national organization to reform marijuana laws. And I started learning and becoming friends with these famous advocates. Jack Harris passed away. Dennis has passed away. And
you're still kicking.
Elvie's still here. Yeah.
That's good. So tell us a little bit. You don't have to mention names, but you said you were able to talk your doctor into getting off of his prescription and into...
Since my doctor's retired, okay, he's on different platforms, and it's kind of like a, I don't know, he learned from me, but yet he's, you know, not done nothing to help me push this message on, you know what I mean? And so this is what you find in a lot of this I call it just still a movement because it's still moving, but in a lot of big egos and stuff. And so my doctor gave me my opiates and stuff, my wife told me one day, she says, hey, has the doctor, you know, seen you on your medicine? So I went out and smoked a hooter before I went into the appointment. Since that day, he had me always smoke my medicine and actually talk to other pain patients in his office. And this was down in Marin. And so about 2007, I went in there, me and my wife, and they had the whole office closed down. And they said, hey, the doc's back here waiting for you because he needs to see you. I go in there, and he's, you know, shaking. So you don't know you're an addict on opiates until you quit. And so I went through 14 different withdrawals, and so did he. And all I could do is counsel him and tell him what did he need to get for. So when you have access to this plant in San Francisco, there's a lot of clubs back in 2007. And so he had access. He had all the money. I just told him how to do it. And he did it. And then that's where he became a believer. And my doctor, he used to teach psychiatry at UC Davis, professor. So he's really educated in the brain. But he told me one day, because I treated with him for every month for 27 years, he said, John, you're an effing mind manipulator. And I thought, wow, okay, I can really change the world, right? So I convinced Feinstein that OxyContin was bad. And
you said something interesting off the air at the beginning. You said OxyContin was actually heroin.
I call it legal heroin. They just changed the name. In Robert Randall's book, it's called Marijuana RX, The Patient's Fight for Medical Pot. And Robert Randall was the first federal patient in 1978. On his book, page 213, you can see where our federal agencies met secretly to try to put heroin back in the pharmacy because they feared marijuana, the first federal patient. Only 32 or 31 other patients got to be put in that program before Bill Clinton closed it down in 1992. And so 1996 comes along. Dennis Perone gets us medical cannabis through Compassion Use Act in California, the first state to have it, because the AIDS patients and all these dying patients, the pharmaceutical feared that. Government feared that. So they legalized OxyContin by changing the name. Purdue started making OxyContin. So to me, what's the difference of a name? And you guys know where heroin even was generated from? It was the Civil War. I have a lot of history of opiates and cannabis way, way back. And so morphine was developed in like 1802. In the Civil War, the soldiers, they had carpenters that were doctors. They cut their arms, legs off, and they become a morphine addict. And so heroin came out in about I believe it was 1876, and heroin was going to save the world. And in 1914, Harrison Act, they took heroin off the market, and cannabis was used to replace that. And marijuana or cannabis was used for medicine in America all the way up till 1937. And so we needing this medicine back. The young kids are going to the genie's out of the bottle. I don't believe that it's ever going to go back. But, mm-hmm. you know, the question everyone needs to know is how do we get it? How do we stay safe with it? And how do we use it right? Mm-hmm. And
well, I think what you just said or what you shared, you know, again, I'm taking face value. Obviously, I'm a person that would want to go back and research and stuff. But as you're talking about it, it really looking at our past tells a lot about who we have become in the future. I mean, to think for a minute that heroin or those kind of drugs were actually invented or discovered and being used that far back, and then at some point in time in our history, it was noted as being not good or healthy or bad or whatever that is, and then to turn around and say, you know, oh, we're going to use marijuana as a substitute because it works or whatever, like you just said. But then to also know that, okay, now here, this is something that's readily available that people can do or buy or grow and all that stuff. So we have to take that off because we need to give the control back to the government or the pharmaceutical and stuff. Those are the things that I always find interesting. If you truly look at history and you follow it step by step, it's mind blowing what we've done, how we've behaved, what we've lost, what we take away.
So we only have a few minutes left.
What were you going to say?
I want to say one thing.
Yep, go ahead.
How many times have you heard our doctor say, 50 years ago we were using this, 60 mm-hmm. years ago we mm-hmm. were using this, when he goes to treat mm-hmm. today's ailments?
Mm-hmm.
So all it through is that COVID, full circle.
All through COVID, our doctor said, oh, gosh, you know, this is what I use, and it works perfectly, and this is how I'm treating people, but this has been around for 50 years, right? And it's like all you have to do is just this.
Right.
What you got in the bottle?
I know, I was going to say.
What you got in the jar?
This is my olive oil fuchsia tea, I call it. And so I'm very privileged. I
looks like a witch's brew.
I get it's Costco olive oil.
Uh-huh.
But the trick is it's my cannabis. I get to grow, you know, in my county of Tehama. So, you know, the patients have to have access, and I don't know how they get it. Just knowing it works for them isn't enough. Oh, there is the Brownie Mary and Dennis Perone Act that every dispensary should, it's compassion use deal. So if a patient has a medical cannabis or recommendation, they can go to any licensed store and ask them about this compassion use. California passed it, and they'll give them free medicine. If they don't have it in their store, demand that they do have it in their store.
Lots of head scratching. Lots of things to think about.
No, well, even yesterday at the County Board of Supervisors, you know, we have people arguing back and forth, and there was somebody there making the case against cannabis. And again, for myself, you know, 10 years ago, I'd buy it, but now I'm like, no, I don't think so. So, me personally, I'm an advocate of doing your own research, actually diving into it. And,
which usually then gives you the idea, the ability to make your own decisions.
Fancy that.
Right.
You know, because like you said, it's here to stay, right? Like you said, the genie's out of the bottle. So because the genie's out of the bottle, I think if people actually researched it, the criminal element will, decrease, right? Because the more you're, educated about it, you know, it starts to make more sense, right?
I would like to see this plant as free as the tomato and corn plant.
Mm. There you go.
Well, there you have it.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
It's been a great show.
That was an hour. Can you believe that?
No.
Just thank you. Like thank you, John, Patient Zero.
Thank you, guys.
Much appreciated. Bye-bye.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.